This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, episode 128, Fall Risk Assessment and Fall Prevention in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith.
Hello out there and welcome back. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are your hosts for this episode. This episode, we're talking about one of the more common injuries, one of the more common problems that we see as nursing home abuse and neglect lawyers in long-term care facilities, and that is injuries from falls. And one of the more, I don't know how you would say it, one of the main ways in which nursing homes can prevent injuries from falls and prevent falls themselves is through efficient, accurate assessments upon admission and thereafter. And so we're going to dedicate the bulk of this episode to talking about fall risk assessments. We're not going to do that alone. We have a special guest. Will, tell us who we have today all the way from the other side of the globe in New Zealand.
Well, we actually have Professor Nari Kurse, who is currently the Joyce Cook Chair in Aging Well, Head of the School of Population Health, Faculty of Medical and Health Sciences, University of Auckland, New Zealand, with a part-time general practice clinical commitment and a full-time academic work. Her research interests include gerontology research, focusing on maintaining function and quality of life, preventing falls, and ensuring evidence-based delivery of primary medical care. She has been a leader in fall prevention, having conducted 8 clinical trials in the area, and is part of the Cochrane Review Group for Fall Prevention in Residential Care. She leads the LILACS New Zealand cohort studies of Maori and non-Maori octogenarians, that's a lot of syllables, and ongoing adverse advisory roles with the Ministry of Health in New Zealand. That's a lot to say. Octogenarian, Maori.
I'm actually quite proud that you made it through that. That was a difficult introduction. But at any rate, Dr. Kurse, welcome to the show.
Kia ora.
Thank you very much, Rob. Happy to be here.
Excellent. So Will and I, in just a second ago, were talking about how falls and injuries from falls can result in some pretty serious injuries for nursing home residents, and that one of the main ways that nursing homes can prevent falls is by accurately assessing each individual resident for their risk of fall, the likelihood that they will fall. Yeah. So if you could, Nairi, can you just walk us through, you know, what makes fall risk assessments so important, and what role do they have at the admission of a nursing home resident?
Okay. So there's some important things to realize about risk assessment. So risk assessment may be a process where the admitting nurse or the admitting doctor ways of factors or characteristics of the person that make them more likely to fall. For instance, being over 90 makes you more likely to fall than being under 90. For a particular risk of falling, such as sleeping tablets, increase the risk of falling. So it's for the clinician who's admitting the person, it's understanding those risks so that the care plan or the way that the person is supported in the nursing home can be adapted. Now, it's not so much the risk assessment as what happens as a result of the risk assessment that is important. Mm-hmm. You can imagine you have a nice checklist in front of you, and you've got the risks related to mobility, people who have had strokes and have difficulty walking, people who have lower leg weakness or significant arthritis are much more likely to fall. You can check that box. But unless you actually organize care to take that risk into account, you're not going to change the situation for that person. Does that make sense to you?
No, it does. I mean, it would be pointless if you have a great assessment, but you're not actually...
you don't go anywhere with it.
You don't go anywhere with it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right. And there's been quite a lot of work done about risk assessments. Now, risk assessments can be really long and have 25 things on them, or they can be quite short and focused. And also, who does the risk assessment is important. Mm-hmm. If it's a well-trained nurse or health professional, then they're already thinking when they're doing the risk assessment of what's available to meet those risks, if you like.
Yeah.
And so the better qualified clinician that you can get to do the risk assessment, the better outcome in the long term.
Yeah, I've noticed that, and I'm not trying to be disparaging because I worked in the healthcare field. My dad's a nurse. My brother's a nurse. But I have found that in my experience, a lot of nurses, it's just a rote thing that they do where they go through the motions and they're like, okay, do you have a history of falls? Do you have this? And there's really no attempt to really analyze this person's risk assessment. It's really just, it's a check mark that they have to do. Like, okay, did you check this off or check this off?
Before going to the next task.
And so now I got to go to the, and a lot of times, you know, it's here in America, these people are really understaffed. So that's a problem.
I totally agree. Understaffed and under pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And the risk assessment is part of their KPIs or their performance appraisal. So the more risk assessments they do, they think they're doing a good job and they are doing a good job. I think we have to realize that most people who work in aged residential care really want to do the right thing.
Agreed.
And really want to be resident-centered and really want to do the best thing, but they're under so much pressure. So the risk assessment is very useful, but you have to get the organization to deliver the real resource changes that are needed from the risk assessment. So the person with mobility risks who is at risk of falling because they've got severe arthritis in the knee that has balance problems because they've had a stroke, they need physical therapy and they need an individualized physical therapy program that they are then assisted to undertake. So that means, you know, sit to stands, lower leg strengthening, balance retraining. And that, of course, is expensive. And so we have to, as families and other people supporting older people in residential care and nursing homes, push the organizations to turn on the tap so that they can get that physical therapy. Mm-hmm. So the risk assessment is good to identify those who need it, but then they have to actually get it before the risk is reduced.
That makes sense. And Nyree, you mentioned just a few minutes ago about some assessments that might be 5 questions and some that might be 25 questions. What are, in your opinion, what are the characteristics of an assessment that would set one apart from the other to make one better or worse than another one? What characteristics of a fall risk assessment make it, you know, good or bad or differentiate it from one another?
Well, I think it's about the person that does it as much as the risk assessment itself.
I see.
So if the person who does it has knowledge and understands the risks and the therapies that might be available to meet the risks, then the risk assessment that points you straight to the response is the best. So I've seen one called the FRAC-UP or the FRACS, which is, so you've got one of the areas is mobility. And so it's simply the clinician thinking about that person's mobility, realizing that it's balance and gait, and therefore going to physiotherapy. The next area might be health conditions. So we know that people who have Parkinson's disease are at 6 times the risk of falling than people who don't have Parkinson's disease. And so it's the ability of the person to understand Parkinson's disease, extra risk. Let's get the doctor to review those medications. Let's get the neurologist to review the management of the Parkinson's disease. So it's the ones where the most utility in accessing the resources can be operationalized. So I don't want to recommend any particular risk assessment over any other risk assessment because each facility, each home has a pretty good idea about what they have available and what they want their staff to do. Mm-hmm.
So I guess the analogy would be then, Nyree, would be the risk assessment is a tool, and the tool is only as good as the person that is using that tool. So
exactly.
That's kind of how to look at it.
So you need a very good carpenter And very good carpenters can do stuff without tools, but if you give them good tools, then they can do an extra, you know, exemplary job.
Right. It's a poor workman who blames his tools.
Yeah. Exactly. That's exactly right. Yeah.
So, and then you mentioned kind of varying categories, different categories that would have their own subset of questions on on an assessment. So, for example, you mentioned, you know, does the individual have any disease diagnosis like arthritis, or does the individual have medication? Can you kind of elaborate on that? What are the different categories, and then why are those categories important?
So in the health condition area, you have the specific health conditions that make you very likely to fall. Parkinson's disease, specific neurological disorders, PSP is one that some people might know about, having had a stroke that affects your mobility, having a specific balance disorder or movement disorder. Those are categories of conditions that make you at very high risk. And then there's the general comorbidity category. So people who have a lot of health conditions that might interact with each other are at higher risk. Then there are the psychological issues or psychiatric disorders. So having dementia puts you at higher risk of falls. And there's quite a few reasons for that. People with dementia become disoriented in their place and forget where the bathroom is, for instance. So increased confusion. People with dementia also, some of them are very active and walk a lot, but many of them have that secondary symptom of apathy and sit a lot. So low activity is another risk, and that's related to dementia. Depression is a really interesting medical condition that puts you at increased risk of falls. People who have depression are between 2 and 5 times increased risk of falls in the next year in residential care. And depression is very common. So up to 50% of people in nursing homes have been thought to have some depressive symptoms. Now, the reason for that is there's two ways to think about those reasons. People who are depressed just don't want to do as much, so they sit more. So less activity increases your risk of falls. And then people with depression, they also have a central process going on in their brain where the brain neurotransmitters are lower. And that also affects coordination and balance. So there are two strikes against them for those with depression. So in general, you've got, in summary, the specific balance and gait issues with health conditions. Then you've got the multiple comorbidities where people are just quite sick. And then you've got the psychological depression and dementias under the health condition banner. Now, medications. We could talk about medications for a long time. And medications are a double-edged sword. Older people in nursing homes need medications to control their diseases and to control their symptoms. But the combination of those medications causes other side effects. And so, for instance, when you give somebody good treatment for heart failure, it might include a diuretic, which makes you pass more urine. Having passed more urine, sometimes that makes you dizzy when you stand up, so you can be more likely to fall because you're dizzy when you stand up, which is because of the medication, but you need the medication for the heart failure. So you have to be really clever to look at the medication list and try to decide, okay, everybody wants us to stop medications, but which ones should we stop? And which ones does this particular patient or resident really need? And that's a really complicated question. The medications we know put people at higher risk of falls include the psychotropic medications. So these are the medications which are for anxiety, which are for agitation. And actually, an antidepressant medication also puts you at a higher risk of falls. So medications, yes, try to stop some of them, but be aware that if people are on medications, they might need a bit more time when they stand up to get oriented to let their blood pressure catch up with them as they stand up. Or they might need additional balance training. If you know that psychotropic medication is necessary, then think about the falls prevention activity program as well as the medication. So there's quite a lot to think about in those risk areas of health conditions and medications.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot to that. It seems to me, Irene, I might be wrong, but Could you was if is it fair to say that you could do an accurate fall risk assessment without ever laying eyes on the person, just using the medical records? Or what is it to say that we should be actually looking at somebody as we do this?
Okay, so that's a really good question too. You can do parts of your risk assessment by just looking at the medical records because there will be information about health conditions and medications. It is very difficult to do a proper mobility assessment by looking at the record. Now, some records, however, so for instance, in nursing homes in New Zealand now, there is a standardized comprehensive assessment that is done on everybody as they come in, and that's called an interi assessment, and it just runs through a whole different areas of function and health, and it is a functional status is recorded. Now, functional status is a term that's used a lot. That basically means, is the person able to get to mobilize themselves? Are they able to transfer themselves from a chair to the bed or from the chair to standing? Are they able to mobilize independently? Can they put their own clothes on independently? Can they get to the toilet? So the functional status gives you very good information about mobility. So if you have that information in the medical record, you can use the medical record. And in fact, that standardized residential care interi assessment does give you information about does give you information about falls risk because it uses some algorithms to look at those areas in the assessment that are there to give you a falls risk. So you can do some things just with looking at the record, but not everything.
Right. That makes
Does
sense.
that make sense?
That makes perfect sense. You hinted at this a few times, but let's transition into this. So you've got a great assessment. All right. You've factored in the medication, you've factored in physical issues, the diseases and disorders. You've done all that. You've come down with the rating. You've come down with the probability that the individual would fall, and now it's time to execute. So, can you just walk us through some of the techniques and interventions that nursing homes can use to prevent the falls based on the information that they have from that assessment?
Okay, so when you look at the literature for about interventions in nursing homes, there is a very mixed picture that you get. And I don't know whether people have heard of something called a Cochrane review. That is a systematic review where people sit down and they systematically search all of the literature that's been published about an area, and then they quality assess the articles and then they put them together into groups. So the Cochrane review about care homes and nursing homes really has inconsistent messages about what we should be doing. So we know that the risks are associated with the falls, but sometimes interventions specifically for those risks have not been consistently successful. One thing that's very simple that is successful is to supplement the all residents with vitamin D. Now, vitamin D in people in nursing homes, vitamin D, you can eat vitamin D, but we get most of our vitamin D from contact with the sun with our skin. And anybody who's been into nursing homes knows how hard it is to get people outside, especially in the winter in North America and other places. So vitamin D is usually a deficient vitamin in people in nursing homes, and it's easy to supplement. Many nursing homes are already doing this. There's only a couple of issues where people should not get vitamin D, and they're well known to doctors and nurses. So in New Zealand, we've tried to do an audit so that and recommended that everybody has a supplement of vitamin D. And we know that that reduces falls in nursing homes where people are vitamin D deficient. So that's a very simple thing. And it's actually not related to the risk assessment. So that's the first thing. And so let's talk about the mobility risks. There have been a lot of strategies tried to reduce risks and injuries from falls in nursing homes. Now, one of them that is commonly used, which actually hasn't been supported by randomized trials, is alarms. So some homes will have an alarm that they might attach to the shoulder of an older person so that when they get up, the alarm goes off and somebody comes to assist. Now, that doesn't seem to prevent that person from falling, and I think there's a few reasons for it. Firstly, it inhibits the person from actually being active because the alarm goes off and they get scared and they sit down again.
Right.
So they don't actually get their yeah. usual amount of activity to keep their lower legs stronger or not. The issue that it's trying to combat is having not enough staff to be able to provide surveillance and to provide assistance when people want to mobilise. Mm-hmm. So while it's there to try to protect the person, somehow it doesn't seem to work. And other strategies such as changes in staffing have been shown to make some differences. Mm-hmm. There are times during the day when the staff are not as available or not as accessible to all the residents, and those are times of change of shifts and meal times, and that's because they're busy doing other things. Usually in the mornings, all the showering and all the moving people around, there are more staff.
Mm-hmm.
So each home should think on an individual basis about how they can make sure that there's enough staff available in the common areas so that when the residents who might be quite frail want to get up and go to the toilet or want to get up and transfer, they can be there to give them some assistance without needing to have an alarm. So we know that staffing patterns make a difference, so that's an important thing.
You know, the other thing I don't like about alarms is you quickly, and we use a lot of pressure alarms too, so that they get out of bed, the alarm goes off. You quickly become very numb to hearing alarms. And because they're
the old cry wolf.
They're going off all the time, and so it's not you zone them out. I mean, you tune them out.
I think that's partly why they're not effective either, because again, the alarm goes off. There's got to be a response, and if the response doesn't happen, then the person carries on and falls. So alarms are important to realise that they are limited. The pressure alarms are very interesting too, aren't they? I know they're very, very prevalent, but the evidence base for them is not as consistent. Can I ask you guys about those pressure alarms? Would you say that most nursing homes are using them?
In my experience, most nursing homes are using pressure alarms versus the alarms that attach. So they'll go in the wheelchair, they'll go in the bed, they'll go in the geriatric.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And if everybody's got one and they go off all the time.
Oh, and they're constantly going off.
Response?
Yeah. If you're going to have an alarm, it needs to be a rare event so that when it happens, like for example, they'll have sometimes the RFID bracelets that go on wanderers so that they don't leave certain areas, or if they do, we know about it and we can respond quickly. But if you've got a pressure alarm, you're going to have one going off constantly, and staff just as humans tune them out.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I think there's new technology coming in this area that might be quite helpful for older people. Because if you have an RFID bracelet on a wanderer, that in a way keeps them safer because the staff can see where they are at any particular time. And that enables them to be more liberally, you know, late, and enables them to be more active, because they can go into the gardens or around into an outside area and still people know where they are.
And get that vitamin D.
The other thing go ahead.
I said, and get that vitamin D that they so desperately need. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Get the vitamin D. Okay, so let's talk about exercise. Now, exercises are really, really successful in people in the community for falls prevention. And the exercise pattern is for lower leg strengthening and balance retraining. So the lower leg strengthening are simple things like sit to stands, like having a small weight on the ankle and bringing your leg out to the side as you're standing behind a chair. Simple lower leg strengthening. The balance retraining is where you challenge your balance. So you might be leaning forward to the point where you might over, but you don't actually, you know, fall over because you may be supported by a chair or something. Now, Tai Chi is a very interesting activity program. Tai Chi has been shown to be very successful in the community and has been used in specific parts of, in nursing homes with good success. And if you think about what Tai Chi is, it's very challenging to your balance, and it's also very good for your concentration. So there's a cognitive component there as well. And I think emerging in the literature is this idea that if you have good cognitive stimulation as well as some balance and lower leg strengthening, that might be even more successful.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's interesting because I feel like people are wanting some type of, like, you know, not necessarily quick fix, but the secret fix or whatever, when the two principal things that you've mentioned are, number one, vitamin D, a vitamin, and two, exercise to prevent falls.
But the exercise has to be real exercise, because I know I've been to many facilities and they say, yeah, we have exercise, and you go along and you see that people are seated and they're batting balloons around or they're doing simple stretches. That doesn't actually work.
Right, that's more for the mind. I would say the cognitive.
It's good. It's good. And it's good. It's good entertainment, and it's good. It's a good purposeful thing to do, but it doesn't change the way your ability to get up and mobilize, which is what prevents you from falling.
Right.
So, an exercise falls prevention exercise program, I think we should think about it in that specific category of falls prevention exercises, and it needs to be challenging. It needs to have the person huff and puff. Nobody likes to do that to their grandma. And it needs to be progressive on the muscles. So once they've done 5 sit to stands and it gets too easy, then you do 10 sit to stands.
Right.
So progressing the amount of activity. And if we can manage to do that more individualized and more high intensity exercise, then there is evidence that falls can be prevented in residential care. The difficulty is that it's expensive because you need physical therapists and people who are trained to be able to do it. And you need to do it for at least an hour, maybe twice a week. Once a week may not be enough. And so that's quite expensive.
Yeah,
I could imagine. Well, Nairi, we've talked about the importance of risk assessment, what goes into them. We've talked about the interventions and execution of what you've learned from the assessment. Let's talk about nursing home staff and what they should do after a fall has occurred.
Yeah.
Exactly. What are some of the standard operating procedures that a nursing home should undertake after a fall?
Okay, so I think everybody would recommend a health assessment after a fall. I mean, each fall is different. Most falls in nursing homes, when you look at the records, say found on the floor. So it's quite unusual for somebody to see the fall happen. Important to realize after the fall that significant injury could have happened.
Right.
And to do an injury screen, if you like, so to talk to the person, are they awake, to find out if there's any areas of bleeding or obvious areas of injury. Think about hip fracture.
Mm-hmm.
Hip fractures are really quite common, 10 times the rate in nursing homes compared to those the community. Are you still with me?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Okay, good. That technique of recognizing a hip fracture is relatively straightforward, and all nurses and most care assistants should be able to check for that. And then there's the sort of hot assessment, if you like. Has there been a significant injury? And then also at the time, try to work out what actually happened. How did they come to fall? Sometimes it's obvious. There is some kind of environmental hazard, and I guess that's the other thing we didn't talk about in the area of interventions that might work. Environmental hazards, things for people to trip over, things for them to run into, lighting levels in nursing homes, all those things are really important to think about. Is there a reason for this fall? The second most common reason, has there been a major medical event with this person? So are they acutely unwell and has that caused the fall? Have they had a heart attack? Do they have the flu? Do they have a chest or a urine infection? So once the acute, urgent, okay, there's not really a significant injury, the next stage is thinking about, have they had a cause that has fallen? What is the cause that we can address make sure that they have a good health assessment. And that may include a urine test, a blood test, and a physician to look the person over and listen to their chest. So those two stages, and then the third less urgent stage is, okay, now we know this person is at a high risk of falls because they've had a fall.
Right.
How can we institute some fall prevention strategies that will prevent them from falling over again?
Right. So what are some of the things that families can do to get more involved in fall risk prevention?
That's a really good question. I'm really passionate about getting families into nursing homes and getting them involved in the processes and the activities in homes. Mm-hmm. I think falls prevention, the more people who are around older people, the more productive activities that the older resident can do, the less likely they are to fall. And so what families can do is, I think that families know the older person the best. So they can think about activities and things, and purposeful activities the older person can do, and go in and engage with the person. That is a strong cognitive activity in itself. Take the person for a walk. Do the physical exercises with them.
Yeah.
Understand where they're at with any therapies that they need and participate. So that's my call to families, is to participate with your older relatives in their nursing homes.
Well, that's a lot of fantastic advice. This 30 minutes has gone by very quickly.
And
I can't believe it's half an hour already. I do understand the limitations that families have because there is just no time. But if the one thing you could do is free up some time for your older resident and go in and find out where they're at and do stuff with them, you know, you will reap the benefits and so will they.
Yeah, absolutely. Nari, we really appreciate you coming on. Your expertise in this is extremely impressive. And just, you know, for anybody out there listening to this, this is barely the tip of the iceberg.
It's the tip of the iceberg, I agree.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really is. But we thank you for taking your time and meeting with us early in the morning on the other side of the world.
On the other side of the world.
That's right, yeah. It's not too early. I'm okay.
Okay. Very good. Okay, well, Nairi, thank you so much.
Okay, and I want to say thank you to you guys too. I know you guys do a good job in getting messages out there to people who are really keen to hear them. So thank you for the opportunity.
Don't touch that dial. While we concluded our conversation with Dr. Kurse, we unfortunately lost the rest of this episode. There wasn't that much left to it. We were just going to say that you can catch new episodes of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast every other week on Monday mornings, wherever you get your podcasts, or you can always check us out on our YouTube channel or at nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. And with that, we will see you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.